Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing getting paid on demand, sneaky internet bill increases, and cheap drugs. That's right, Joel. This is our Friday Flight episode where we cover some different headlines that we came across this week, some different stories in the news, and specifically we're going to talk about how they pertain to our personal finances. But before we get to that, last weekend you spent some time on the road, right? You went and visited some family last weekend.
That's right, yeah. So we all actually met up. We stayed at a cabin together for one night just outside of Knoxville, outside of Dollywood, which is actually where we went, rode some roller coasters.
Very nice.
Good time.
And you were explaining to me, like, in my mind, I pictured Dollywood being sort of like this, like a fake town, basically. You know?
Well, it's got elements of that, but it's more Six Flags than...
Exactly. You're saying there's, like, actual roller coasters there.
Some really good ones.
Yeah. Well, that means that Dollywood's kind of, like, bumped up slightly in my book, but again, it's been, like, decades since I've even been to Six Flags.
Worth a visit, I will say. It's a little expensive, though. So,
okay.
But, yeah, it's a fun trip, and it's, you know, pretty right there in the foothills of the Smokies, but...
You've got family right there as well, right?
Yeah,
so
close by.
So you'll have a good time meeting up.
No doubt. So, but I wanted to mention, yeah, the second night we ended up staying in a hotel. It was my first time staying in a hotel since the pandemic began, and it was great. It was a totally fine experience. But then I read this story about how Hilton hotels are going to stop doing daily housekeeping.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, you're so used to, while you're away during the day, not in your room, someone comes in, makes your bed, tidies up, you know, cleans the bathroom, and then you come back and you're like, ah, it's all fresh and tidy. But yeah, apparently this is kind of something that's going away. Housekeeping costs a decent bit, and people don't necessarily appreciate it to the extent that you would expect. And so, yeah, I was wondering what's your take. If you could pay less to stay in a hotel but not receive the daily housekeeping, would you do it?
Oh, yeah. Well, if I could opt out of that and that actually meant that I was saving money, I would 100% do it. Because here's the thing, I'm one of those people who isn't used to room service coming in and, you know, putting fresh towels up and...
Oh, you don't have that at your house, just a...
Well, that's the thing, like, I don't go and stay in hotels all that often. And so, honestly, literally, anytime I go to a hotel, for me, it feels weird for, you know...
Someone to be coming in there and doing
seriously.
It for you.
Because, I mean, at home, I mean, we kind of clean up, like, once a week or every couple weeks like that. And so... I just don't feel the need for there to be cleaning up like that has to happen every single day, right? Like, that's not how often I clean my bathroom at home,
right.
And so I'm not expecting that. When I'm staying in a hotel, I guess I do a pretty good job just, like, not destroying the place when I go and stay at a hotel. But, like, yeah, I take my towels, I hang them up so they dry. It's not like I need a brand new, you know, freshly laundered towel because mine just, like, wadded up in a wet ball in the corner. Like, who does that? I mean, I don't do that at home.
Who lives like that?
Well, I mean, obviously people live like that because they're used to doing that in a hotel, but that's just not how I roll. And honestly, the privacy aspect of it too. You know, like, you're staying
someone
in
coming into your space. Yeah,
yeah. Like, I've got all my stuff kind of out, and especially too, like, anytime.
Let's be honest, they don't want your stuff, Matt.
Nobody wants
maybe
my stuff.
Maybe somebody else's stuff, but not yours.
Like, maybe like a laptop or a camera. Yeah. Or something. I don't know. Not my phone.
I will say, yeah, it is a good feeling to come back and your room is tidy, but it's also an awkward feeling. I agree. And if it meant that I could save money by, you know, avoiding having someone come in and clean the room, if it meant that my room cost less, I would be 100% all about that.
Yeah, and I'm for it anyway because of the privacy, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't want somebody, like, I don't know, in my space who I don't know, especially if, like, all the kids' stuff is out as well. It's just like, well, you just leave it there. We know where everything is, and we'll take care of it later. But
well, it'll be interesting to see if that's something that catches on, and if, you know, some hotels make that like a calling card saying, hey,
exactly.
Come stay here. It costs less money because, yeah, we don't offer this perk or this perk. And sometimes it's all about the proliferation of perks, and I'm like, no, give me fewer perks if it means that I get to pay less money for it.
Exactly. That's like the difference between, like, flying Delta versus flying Southwest or Frontier, right? It's like, well... I don't care to have free checked bags because I don't want to check a bag. That's not how I'm going to fly.
Exactly.
So if there are tiers and different rates that you can pay based on what you're willing to receive from that, I am 100% for that, dude. I think that's great.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm totally willing to, you know, do the backpack on my shoulders.
Yeah.
And if it means that I can spend less on the ticket and then also avoid some sort of check bag fee, like, I'm in.
kind of comes down to the money.
as it always does.
As it does here on How to Money.
Yep, yep. All right, well, let's keep getting on, Matt. Let's get to the Friday Flight and the sampling of stories we found interesting this week. I want to say, too, congrats on your purchase of that Super Mario game, the Unwrapped one.
Gosh.
What was it, $1.56 million?
I saw that.
I didn't know you had that kind of money laying
around. So ridiculous.
That's the best investment you've ever made.
Well, here's the thing. It was the Super Mario 64, right? It was that cartridge. And it's not like that was like the first one they ever made or anything. It was just one that hadn't been opened.
Yeah.
And so it was extremely ridiculous. People have too much money. But, I mean, if there ever was a game that were to fetch that much money, that game was like groundbreaking, dude.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The ability to explore 3D worlds. It was amazing.
That's true. No, it was.
You seem less enthralled about it.
Well, I don't really play video games anymore.
I don't now, but back in the day, I mean, as a kid, I just
never
remember having my mind blown.
Even had a Nintendo 64,
oh,
which I feel like was probably the best game system of its time.
N64 was the best. Yeah.
I always had like the Sega Genesis, which was fine.
Sega was great.
It wasn't as good. Yeah. It wasn't as good. All right, well, yeah. And Matt, it's important for us to mention, too, the child tax credit updates.
Yeah.
35-plus million people yesterday should have gotten money in their account. So yeah, check your bank account and see if that direct deposit showed up for you as it did for Matt and I.
Mm-hmm.
Future deposits are going to happen on the 15th day of the month. The payments are between $250 and $300 per kid, depending on the age of your kid, if you're eligible for the expanded child tax credit.
Yeah,
so
basically the 15th is like everybody who has kids, it's like their new favorite day of the month for
exactly.
The rest of the year.
It's like payday and 15th.
You know you're
yeah.
going to get that little, what feels like a little bonus there on the 15th
exactly.
every month.
Yeah, but you know, we want to mention, don't forget to have a plan for this money, especially as people are finally starting to receive it. Preferably using it to accelerate debt payoff if you're in that position, or to stabilize your savings if you're in that position, or even allowing you to invest a little bit more, and maybe even into a 529 plan for your child if you're already doing a great job investing in your own retirement accounts. And yeah, if your funds for some reason didn't show up, head to the IRS Child Tax Credit Update portal for some details. We'll link to that in the show notes. Some folks, but not a large percentage, are going to be sent a check. That's going to take a little bit longer to arrive, but it's just important to note that money should be in your account right now, at least the first installment of it.
Exactly. Yeah. So on the note of getting payments earlier than usual, many employees no longer want to wait the standard 2 weeks for money that they've earned. And employers, they are responding to those wants, I guess. They're not demands. They're just wants.
Right? They're not like picketing,
Yeah.
Give me my money now.
I want to get paid right now. But some companies are starting to offer pay-on-demand systems. And the biggest payroll services like Gusto, Paychex, are saying that the number of businesses offering access to these daily pay services has doubled, and the number of workers who are accessing their pay early has also doubled. It's done the same thing, not surprisingly. Walmart, they started doing this back in 2017. The big ride-sharing companies, they followed suit, and now there are lots of other companies who are doing the same. This is, of course, a major benefit to those who are living paycheck to paycheck. Those folks are the most financially vulnerable, and not having the pay that they're earning from their job the day that they make it, it might mean that they would take on riskier measures to make their ends meet. Like I'm thinking about like payday loans or like title loans.
Those are two of the worst.
By far the worst products in existence. And so while it might seem that these are that this is helpful, right? The benefits may not extend as much as they might appear.
Yeah, and I think that's because delayed gratification is one of the essential building blocks of personal finance. It's something we talk about on the show, right? That saving for your future is essentially doing just that. It's prioritizing future you over current you. And waiting 2 weeks to get your paycheck was often one of the ways that we learned that lesson.
Right? It's like one of the very small ways that you would learn that lesson.
Exactly. It was like, okay, cool. Well, I have to wait for the money that I've earned for a couple weeks. And it was forced delayed gratification, helping us, I think, maybe in other ways to prioritize that in our own lives. And so, yeah, some employers are making early access to their pay a free perk, but other employers are actually passing on the fee to their employees for that quote-unquote benefit, right? So early access to your pay might actually cost you a little bit of that pay.
Yeah.
Make sure you know that before you start grabbing your pay early. On one hand, it is nice that employers are making it easier for employees to avoid just some of the awful methods of getting their hands on cash to pay for rent and groceries, Matt, like mm-hmm. you mentioned. But on the other hand, it's crucial for us all to be saving something and to build up enough in our reserves, starting with the number that you and I always talk about, $2,467. It's that is the amount that it's going to take for most people to be able to weather most financial storms that come along without needing to find that money elsewhere. And it just makes me think, Matt, there's this like video of this guy on YouTube that I got to say is like really incredible. We'll link to it in the show notes. But Diamond Dallas Page, former wrestler, has this yoga program. And there have been some people that have done this.
Wait, who takes yoga from a former WWE wrestler?
One of my friends did, dude. And he said Seriously? It was, yeah, he said it was awesome. So it's a wonderful system.
Got to check it out. I like yoga.
Yeah.
I'd go to the free parents yoga associated with the school our kids go to.
Yeah, so it's you know,
just
yoga
meet a bunch of moms.
You're like the only guy there. But
literally.
There's this really cool video about this one guy who started doing DDP yoga, which is what it's called.
Oh,
and
that's so funny.
He lost 198 pounds in 1 year. He was 475 pounds to begin with. And it just made me think, like, when it comes to saving up this $2,467, it might seem on its face for some people that that's going to be really hard or maybe insurmountable. The idea of losing 200 pounds in a year
is awesome.
You know, at least at its outset, seems like it's not going to be able to happen. It seems like it's a goal that can't be accomplished, but he just worked at it every single day. And it was just impressive to see his results. And I feel like for anybody out there who says, well, that's not possible, I need this product in order to solve my financial situation. I mean, I don't know. That video was an inspiration, and I think to a lot of people, and yeah, to me too.
Yeah, well, because I guarantee that he didn't lose nearly 200 pounds by like eating fat-free Triscuits or something, right? He was actually doing the work. He was addressing the underlying issues of the problem. He wasn't just like going with a simple fix, right?
No minor tweaks.
Exactly. And I feel like that's the biggest problem with these like pay-on-demand services is that they are only, it's just a band-aid. It's a temporary fix on something and the underlying issues aren't being addressed. And until you address those real problems, this is something that's going to persist. And so this is why I feel that sometimes these pay-on-demand services might actually do more harm than good because it might just enable the behavior that has led them there in the first place. Right.
Yeah. And then what happens once you've got your pay the day you get paid and you still don't have enough
now
money?
Now you're on that time schedule. Yep. You're still living paycheck to paycheck, or now you're living like week to week or day to day if you're getting paid daily, right? You're not addressing the underlying issue, which is doing the hard work of saving a little bit more and having that margin in your life. I got to check out this video though because I want to see Diamond Dallas Page as a yoga instructor.
Yeah.
But okay, so while we're talking about health here, man, let's move on and talk about cheap drugs. Everybody wants to spend a little bit less money on their drugs, right?
Not much worse than overpriced drugs.
We're talking about prescription drugs, of course. There's been a major spotlight shown on the rising prices of some important drugs recently. And many of the most substantial increases have come on what are called like these designer drugs that aren't used by most folks, right? They're not used by the masses. But if you happen to get a more obscure illness, the drugs to help you could cost a fortune. However, one drug that isn't a designer drug, but it's one that millions of people across the country need and use regularly, is insulin. And those prices have skyrocketed in recent years. Some folks have even taken to driving across the border to buy their insulin over in Canada because the costs have become prohibitive here in the U.S. But thanks to Walmart, cheap insulin is actually now a thing again.
Yeah, that was really exciting news, really good to see. And yeah, starting this month, Walmart is going to be selling their insulin for about $73 a vial. That is actually substantially more affordable.
Yeah, that's a good price.
Yeah, than the $300, which is what the big three pharmaceutical companies charge, right? And so it's ridiculous because they used to charge a reasonable price of $40 back when they introduced their form of insulin in the year 2000.
Yeah, that was not that long ago, 20 years ago.
Right.
It was crazy, like substantially cheaper.
So yeah, the increase is 800%, which is just kind of hard to fathom, right?
Yes.
And according to the Mayo Clinic, insulin in the U.S. has cost 10 times more than what it costs in other countries.
That's crazy.
So yeah, while Walmart gets a lot of flack, I think, and in some ways, maybe deserved. Well, I'm really glad to see them disrupt these massive price increases by the major pharmaceutical companies because this is a drug that people need and many currently can't afford. So yeah just seeing the price drop that much, Walmart's going to have a big influence on a whole lot of people's lives with this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not like this is some crappy version of the drug as well. Like they have partnered with Novo Nordisk, who is one of the major three pharmaceutical companies, right? And so it's not like this is some inferior insulin. This is the good stuff. This is like the rapid acting stuff that people have come to expect that, like, you know, it doesn't take hours to actually start working. It takes like 15 minutes. And so just the fact that they've been able to partner with one of the pharmaceuticals is just, I think, I don't know, just a little telling of the fact that those three companies have essentially cornered the insulin market and been price gouging over the past 20 years. And Walmart has been at the forefront of lowering prescription drug prices for years now, starting with their $4 generic drug list back in the day.
Still remember when they first initially launched that and it was like, okay, this is a big deal.
It's a huge deal, man. And then, you know, since then others quickly followed. But since we're talking about prescription medicines, GoodRx, they announced this deal with DoorDash, similar to a deal that was created for USAA members. DoorDash workers, also known as Dashers, they now have access to GoodRx Gold, which gives them access to substantially discounted prescription drug prices. But that being said, you don't need to be a DoorDash worker
or a
USAA member in order to pay less for your prescription drugs on the reg. Using GoodRx is totally free. You don't have to pay anything. But if you or someone in your family takes a lot of medications, then you know, consider paying and joining the Gold program, because that could end up saving you a ton of money. But even just the regular non-subscription GoodRx is an incredible money-saving tool that we would totally recommend, and we'll make sure to link to them in our show notes.
No doubt. All right, well, we got more to get to, Matt, including why your cup of coffee every morning is going to cost just a little bit more. We'll get to that and some other stories right after this break. All right, we are back, and it's time to get to some more headlines that we found interesting this week, Friday Flight.
Plus that expensive coffee story that you mentioned, Joel, yeah. And I am literally drinking a cup of coffee right now, so I am very interested.
and fearful, I think. Well, yeah, but first, before we get to that, Matt, we got to get to the ludicrous headline
of the week.
There you go. You hit it right on the head. Someone on Twitter requested that we actually go falsetto this week.
Yeah, so. I can't believe we actually are.
You came through on the clutch.
You know, I try to deliver. I want to make people happy.
All right. Well, this one is how internet and TV providers get away with jacking up your bill. This comes from the Washington Post. And yeah, the writer of this article describes something that all of us have dealt with at one point or another, signing up for internet and getting a bill for way more than we bargained for and way more than we were promised on the phone or, you know, online through a chat, right?
That bait and switch tactic.
Exactly.
Man, I hate that.
And Matt, it actually just happened to me. Like, all we did was move to a new house. And so, yeah, we were literally just moving service, which means we should keep the same rate because we had our current rate locked through October. But our next bill was $10 more.
Mm.
A little sneakiness right there, right? So I had to reach out.
Address change, service fee.
Right, yeah. No, but it wasn't even that. It was like, no, now your new rate's $40. And I was like, wait a
second.
They
didn't itemize it
or
call anything special? No,
not at all. So I reached out to Twitter, like we recommend to a lot of people to do, that sometimes you get the best customer service that way. And then I had to hop back on the phone with one of those social media specialists because they can't resolve it fully through Twitter, which is silly. But yeah, they finally were able to get my bill back to normal. But most of the country has only two options for home internet service, right? So it's not like this is a vibrant competitive marketplace and you can leave this crummy, sneaky company for, you know, one of many others. Like, that's just not how the system works in the United States, sadly. So this lack of competition, it's led to opaque pricing and frustrating customer service for many, many people, myself included, but all of us at one time or another. It seems like if you have home internet, you have at some point been screwed over by the Comcasts, the AT&Ts, or the Cox cable companies of this world.
Yeah, and honestly, if you have just like even a couple options that you can choose between, you're at an advantage, you know, because there's a lot of markets where there's only one provider and they don't really have much choice. You know, you can't kind of hop back and forth like that.
But even still, like when it's a duopoly, it's like there's still not much choice and they kind of work together to keep prices high.
Yeah, sort of like you did, kind of getting on the phone with them, dealing with these different customer service representatives with the internet companies. It takes a lot of patience. You kind of have to get zen with it or maybe put your head in like a monk-like state. Where you're not going to let the stress get the best of you, man.
I know, because if you start yelling, it doesn't help anything.
But here's an interesting stat. 76% of Americans say that internet is as important as electricity or water.
Or blood coursing through your veins. All right, I made up the last one.
You still need your blood. you could live without internet, but that was according to a survey by Consumer Reports. Feels like maybe it's a bit over the top. Certainly we'll take water over home internet access every day of the week.
Yeah,
water.
Me too.
Water's a little more important. But since home internet is probably the equivalent of oxygen to many folks these days, let's quickly talk about how you can pay less for internet. So first of all, you got to be willing to go through the song and the dance of canceling your service, not unlike what you did, Joel. This will get you the customer retention department, which is the only department that has leeway to offer you better terms. So if your pleas maybe fall on deaf ears, then you're probably going to need to switch to the only other provider where you live for a new customer deal. And again, that's assuming that you have access to a second company. And also, keep in mind that switching back and forth on the reg is sometimes the only way to save. If you have options, you know, when you're being loyal to Comcast or to AT&T or to Cox, that's just going to be a recipe for consistently paying too much.
Yeah, I think loyalty is a good thing, Matt. Being loyal to your friends and to your family, but yeah,
not to your
company where you're getting internet from.
Yeah, or your insurance provider was what I was going to say as well.
Like, that's true.
Your car insurance rates tend to go up. They don't go down. They don't reward you for being a longtime customer.
Exactly. Also, I think another way to save money on your internet is question whether you need the fastest speeds or not, right? Like, you could save more by downgrading the service that you get. If you're currently like signed up for like the 400 meg service, well, maybe you can switch to 50 or 100 meg service, which is maybe plenty fast enough for how you use the internet. I think sometimes people frown on that, but it's like, I don't know, man, we're rolling with the 50 meg service and we're paying $30 a month and it works plenty fine for, you know, the streaming that we do and the ways that we use it. But
exactly,
it might not work perfectly for every family, especially if you're working a lot from home, but it's worth considering. Also, get your wireless router out of the cabinet. Get it up high and out in the open. Placement matters a great deal so that you can actually get what you're paying for. And if you're still having issues with it not being fast enough, connect directly to your modem with the Ethernet cord, right? Like, we did this during virtual school and it made a big difference. It made the speeds consistently faster. And hopefully in the future, this isn't going to be as much of an issue as 5G connectivity brings us more options and more competitors into the space. Like, T-Mobile already offers 5G at home. So that's worth considering if that's offered where you live, but you got to fight back against the high prices and the annoying fees. And it's not easy, right? Because they come standard in the industry. I know it's a huge pain point for a lot of people, but it's one of those things where we got to kind of stand up for ourselves and waste the time communicating back and forth in order to get the price that's right.
Yeah. And I want to kind of circle back for a second, because you talked about making sure that your wireless router is in the proper place. People don't think about that, right? Like they truly do stick them in like a closed cabinet and they're wondering why their internet sucks. It's like, well, when the signal has to go through the wall or, you know, through a cabinet, it's not going to work as well. And oftentimes folks
think, or if it's in the front left corner of the house and you're mostly in the back rear, and it's like, well,
you gotta put it somewhere central.
Exactly.
But folks want to take the seemingly easy path and just throw more money at it, and they think, oh, well, we need the higher service.
Got to get that mesh router now that costs $400.
Maybe you do, right? But first, make sure that you've got your router placed somewhere where you can experience like essentially the proper flow of Wi-Fi around your house. It doesn't come down to just, you know, pumping more speed behind it if it can't get through, you know, the walls. Especially, man, we live in an old neighborhood and the old houses, like the walls, they're not made of drywall. They're made of like rock.
Yeah.
Like the old plaster walls is essentially like concrete.
They're so hard.
Yeah, it's a lot different than the newer construction. So especially if you live in an older home, this is something to consider. Joel, you know, while we're talking about like technology here, let's talk about another expensive tech item, smartphones. CNET, they had this article on the 2-year upgrade cycle this week, and they said that it's essentially obsolete, and we couldn't agree more. It's like, this was basically a function of the old 2-year contracts that used to be standard with the different major wireless carriers.
I'm so thankful that the 2-year contract thing is gone.
It's
right?
Actually, like, I feel like it's almost coming back because the phones are getting more expensive.
Well, we
now
talked about that not too long ago, and it's true. It's like they're trying to lure us back into that system, but that is not a good system for us if we want to pay the least amount.
And you don't have to participate with it.
Right.
Like, I'm still rocking the original iPhone SE that was released over 5 years ago. And so, while upgrading every 2 years, it never made financial sense. It certainly made some sense from like a tech improvement standpoint. Phone cameras and the screens and the battery life have all gotten much, much better. I don't know how much longer I'm going to last with my old phone.
Well, yeah. The difference between an iPhone 4 and iPhone 5 is much bigger than the difference between an iPhone 11 and 12, right?
Or what the 12 and the 13 is going to be when it comes out or whatever. The increases in technology are incremental, whereas phones were changing a lot back in the 2010 to 2015 range. The marketing makes it seem like you need that new phone, but the upgrades are just so minor that it's best to stick with what you already got for a little bit longer. That's how you're going to be able to save the most money.
Yeah. let's normalize longer upgrade cycles. Maybe 4 to 5 year upgrade cycles, right? Just holding on to that phone longer is going to be a big monetary savings, and you're not really losing out on all that much.
Yeah, it shouldn't be just to where when you start approaching that 2 year window that you think it's automatically time to get a new phone. Like, it's almost been programmed into our minds that that's the case. But hopefully when you step back and look at it, you realize that it is not necessary.
Yeah, I think the older phone should be more like a badge of honor for us frugal people, right?
That's what we're trying to do, at least.
Yeah, because and not only are you saving money, but you're preventing waste, right? Because the U.S. is the world's second largest contributor to e-waste. We dump nearly 7 million tons of discarded electronics, you know, from our homes every single year. So yeah, forget about the size of the notch or the slightly sharper camera. Doing away with the standard 2 year smartphone ownership timeline altogether is, a boon for your bottom line, but it's good in a whole lot of other ways too, right?
Yeah.
Phones are just not changing enough to justify the expense that cell phone manufacturers continue to try to get us to shell out that money for. We completely agree with CNET. Hold on to that phone a little bit longer. And if you're like itching to get something new, maybe like get yourself a cute little case or something like that that makes your old phone feel a little newer. Show it some love.
Yeah, get you that fresh pop socket to keep you from dropping that thing. So let's talk about inflation. It continues to rise, at least for the time being. And used car prices are a huge reason for that. According to the White House Council of Economic Advisors, 60% of the month-over-month increase has to do with either car sales or a car or auto parts and car rentals. And so just because we're seeing inflation figures at their highest level since 2008, just before the Great Recession, that doesn't mean that we should be overly concerned with it. It seems as if the rise in inflation is leveling off a little bit here, but we'll just have to actually wait and see until July's report comes out next month before we know what the future holds.
I think in a lot of ways it's good to see that so much of that headline number really stems from one section of our economy. And as that supply chain begins to get corrected, we're going to see the overall rate of inflation decline. So right now, if you're trying to buy a car, obviously not a good time.
Yeah.
You're experiencing record levels of inflation. But for the rest of us, inflation is a concern, but it's not nearly as big of a deal, I think, as it's been made out to be by some people. But one sad headline, Matt, this week came from the Wall Street Journal, and it was bad news for coffee drinkers.
This is your coffee story, right?
Yes, this is it. So coffee prices are going up due to poor harvests and increased demand. I guess people are, taking back 3 cups of coffee instead of 2 on average these days. And I will say the price of coffee does impact all of us. So I guess what's the answer to saving there? Well, drinking coffee at home is a big one. The cost difference between buying a cup of coffee while you're out and making it at home is incredible. Like, it's substantial.
Oh, yeah.
Because what was the average cup of coffee cost when you make it at home? Something along the line of 15 to 20 cents?
If I had a guess, yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on how nice your beans are. But yeah, drinking less coffee out. And I'll add, too, you can drink less coffee at home, even though you're spending, a quarter or something like that on a nice cup of coffee at home. I think you can reduce your consumption of coffee at home by drinking it at more strategic points in the day. We've talked about this before.
What do you drink? It's like noon, right?
Yeah, well, so if you can just even delay your morning coffee by a couple of hours. The idea is that your cortisol levels spike first thing in the morning. So that's what makes you feel alert. Too much cortisol, that's what makes you feel anxious and stressed out. But that's what makes you feel alert. And by drinking coffee first thing, right when you wake up, like most people do, it actually kind of dampens that natural effect of that cortisol. And so you're supposed to wait a couple hours until it starts to taper off a little bit, and then you get to pick it right back up with that first morning cup of coffee.
Okay. All right.
I personally like my coffee right after lunch.
And I guess, I wonder, would anybody with rising coffee prices consider quitting coffee altogether? I think, anybody out there who drinks coffee is ultimately...
That seems kind of crazy.
No way.
Yeah, okay.
Not going to happen. Although, but there was an interesting article by Michael Pollan, who the food writer recently. He had an article in The Guardian, and he quit caffeine for 3 months. And he said that his productivity declined quite a bit. He was
understandably
a little more quicker to get frustrated or angry. And yeah, he said that most of us are basically dependent on caffeine these days just to make it to our baseline of productivity. I think there's some truth to that. But yeah, all of us are going to have to get ready to pay a little more for our little daily addiction here, maybe in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, this might be a way that we all as consumers see inflation start to affect our bank accounts just a little bit. Because, come on, it's not like coffee costs all that much money.
No, it's not a huge part of our budget, but yeah, something to be aware of.
Exactly. Well, that's going to be it for this episode of our Friday Flights. We'll have links to the different stories that we mentioned, as well as any other resources that we mentioned during this episode, up on our website at howtomoney.com. We'll have those show notes there for you. We hope everyone has a great weekend, and look forward to an interview this coming Monday with Ken Honda. We're going to talk all about happiness and money. Ken has a unique approach to how it is that we think about money, and we look forward to sharing that episode with you here on Monday. Joel, that's going to be it for today. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.